Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Jesus. Jesus. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me, Tom?
Oh, my God.
Check, check.
I got it. The fuck?
Is that better?
Here he is. Well, what's happening? Here I come. I was charging next to my bed.
Can you hear me?
I think, yeah. Here you go. Can I hear you? What's happening?
Check, check, check.
Can you hear me? Am I on?
I can hear you.
Oh, I'm on. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it could be louder. I want you to be louder. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's shiny back there. Okay, come on. Let's go this way. Okay.
How's that? Check, 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 check.
Thank you for joining us, Adam.
Yeah.
Like, we have nothing better to do. They're out here, Adam Ray. Thank
you. Oh man,
thank you.
It's been one of those pandemics, huh?
It really has. Is that light like crazy right there? Is it crazy? My glass.
Oh, you look good.
Is it dark? Oh Jesus!
You see all your friends.
Right. I have a lot. I grew up. They hadn't invented sunscreen for real. I grew up on a farm.
Hey, wait! Save it for the podcast.
I will say
no. I'm joking. Keep going with your freckle farm story. I want to hear it.
No, when we roll, I'll tell you the whole story.
Oh, we're rolling, baby.
We're rolling. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Sasha.
Welcome, Tom.
Wow, thanks, Sasha. You're full three there, man. Look at you. Look at you. Well, Adam, much like you, I grew up on a farm in Iowa, and
Tell people why we know each other.
They had not invented sunscreen. I'm going to try to explain the difference in you and I's complexion. They had not invented sunscreen. And so that's what this is. And we worked in the fields. And
yeah.
The crop dusters would fly over us. And I'm the oldest of seven kids. And they'd fly over us. And our hair would get wet from the spray for the crop duster. I'm not even kidding. And nobody cared about kids back then. You got on a bus, you went to the church parking lot and got on a bus with drifters. And then you went about 20, 25 miles from your home to detassel corn, if that was the time of year, or rogue beans or bale hay or whatever. And you loved it. And but they also sprayed you down with whatever it was, because it would come in low, you know, to spray the most important thing was the crops.
Right.
As always.
Right.
Unless you had cattle or pigs, and then they were way more important. I'm lucky.
Are lucky. Wait, so you don't know what it was that you were getting sprayed with? It just was
something that they used on the Vietnamese eventually during the war, the DDT. But it was pesticides that are banned now. That's for sure. For real. Yeah. And so, you know, every time they cut something out of our heads, plus even when we went to the lake, because there's no beach there, we took baby oil with iodine in it. That was our suntan lotion. Baby oil with iodine, so we could really get a nice tan. So there wasn't anybody going, hey, you should take it down a notch. We're like, we want to get really like a nice tan. And so, and, you know, it's...
So it must drive you nuts when you see people that can't actually figure out the balance of sun lotion, screen, whatever it be, to like get, you know, figure out, because like, you know, you're saying at that time, like you just were using very unconventional methods. So it's like, right. Now you have too many different options. So if you can't figure it out.
Well, I have two children. They're seven. My son, Jax, is seven. My daughter, Quinn, is 4 and a half, and they've never really been in the sun. I mean, I lather them up and they're, you know, you want it to be like that. You want to get a little touch of the sun because of vitamin D, and you don't want to, but they never really been in the sun. Like, you know, we were just in it, and nobody really cared. Again, nobody's like, hey, wait a minute, kids, because there's so many of us, you know, you can afford to lose a few, you know, and you know, working with machinery. And, but you know, kids today, they're very, where people are very smart. And, you know, you also want to, you want your kids, you don't want to be scared of everything.
Right.
So you got to pick and choose what your, you know, what your, but the sun is bad. A little bit of sun is good. Sunshine, getting about and about, playing outside and roughhousing. But to sit in the sun all day, you know, is bad. You know what else is bad, Adam? Working all the time for your dad in the sun. Making your kids work all the time.
That's is that what's happening? I was going to ask, how are you even, you know, are you taking on the responsibilities of educator for your kids?
Well, I am. Right over there. Everyone over there. You know, we started Zoom first grade. And Sasha, my co-host on my podcast.
Yeah.
Doing the bush.
Of course.
We have to, now my son, we have to trade off because he'll, a few hours Zoom classes.
That's enough.
I mean, it's also hard to keep kids into it. I didn't even, my daughter, the 4.5-year-old, like she went to Zoom preschool last year, starting in March. And she was hard enough keeping her involved in preschool anyway. And so this year I said, I'm not even, just one more year of preschool. And that's bull. Can you say bullshit?
Oh yeah, you can say it.
Oh yeah, that was bullshit. That was like a high price. It was a daycare for rich moms is what it was. So it's like, I'm not gonna pay $40,000 to be on Zoom right over there. She hated it. She wants to hang out with dad. She wants to have fun here. Yeah. And it's the last year she'll do it. First of all, dad's 61. Let's be honest. How many more years are there gonna be hanging out with dad, right? So that I'm not doing it. So she's, you know, she does little things on the, you know, we'll create little fun things that she wants to do. What does she want to learn? Like, she's got her own laptop.
Right.
She's got, you know, she's got some skills. What exactly does she want to do this year? Now, my son is in organized education. That's called first grade. Last year in kindergarten, you know, he passed it. I have to say this.
Thank
he got
God.
A satisfactory. Oh, my gosh. It was touch and go. But you know, we're keeping him involved. It keep it any kid. I don't know how they do it, but
oh yeah,
we, you know, we're doing it, and you know, it's a good thing. And the teachers, God bless, these teachers are, you know, they're geniuses. They're wonderful. They're air traffic controllers.
They're patient.
I mean, I volunteer a lot at his school, and to see the most, the thing you feel the best about is your kid. Like my son is you know, you think, oh my gosh, he's so different than the other kids. He, first of all, he's so much bigger. He's a head taller, and he's, and you think, oh, I've screwed him up so much. He's not going to fit in, and it's going to be, and so you volunteer the first month. You sit in his class, and then I go every month, and you see the difference in your own kid, and see that he's a part of the group, and then he's kind of a leader, and he's sitting there at the table the whole time, pretty much the whole time, and he's got pride in his classroom, and he respects his teacher and what he does. It's the best feeling ever, I have to tell you.
Does the pandemic make you glad that you've gotten to – because I'll hear the flip side from some people, mainly my sister, who's like, man, I've never wanted to work like an 80-hour week more just from being home with three kids most of the time. But it sounds like you're finding that balance to get the hang time in, but also still do your work. Yeah.
Well, you know, the kids have been, you know, because, in our situation, you know, the kids have gone through their parents have gone through a divorce, and a pretty acrimonious divorce. And I've been home with them for a while. I love it. You know, the thing is, I didn't have a kid until I was 54 years old. And,
right.
And it's something I always wanted. And, so I was prepared to be home with the kids. That's what I always wanted to do. And I think that there are some people that are raised with somebody raising the kids and doing that. And I just genuinely, I was raised by a single father. So when he was 22 I was 4, my sister was 3, my brother was 1. So my parents were so young, and, you know, so I genuinely, every moment that I can, and because of circumstance, I've spent a lot of time at home and sort of lived like somebody that would live during a pandemic. So it's not that, you know, I am anxious to get back to work now.
Yeah.
But, and it is, I am sad that I can't drive them to a school where that, you know, that is good for them.
Yes.
And I know that day will come, and I am anxious to get on the road and work somewhere, or, you know, I'm anxious to, for the, our industry to start making the regular kind of movies that aren't all about pandemics and, stand up. I see people are booking stand up. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to, you know, as we have our schedule figured out with their mom, and, oh, I'm going to do that, you know? But I'll tell you what I've done, Adam, and you might, what I've done is I said, here's the deal. Here, there's this pandemic. We are in the house. Sasha, my assistant, who's great with kids, and she had experience with children, she moved in. Well, she just started, she just started not leaving is what really happened, sleeping on the couch.
Yeah.
And she's a comic too. And so the four of us, we live here in this place. There's a pandemic. And so this is the life. And so I said, well, I want to make art about this life. This is the deal. And I heard that she did a podcast like you. And by the way, you are so, I had no idea how talented you were. I knew you. I've done your podcast before.
Yeah.
I started watching what you do on Instagram and stuff, and the character stuff, and all the stuff that you do is so freaking good. And such a variety of stuff. Because I started saying, she said, well, pay attention to podcasts. Who do you like? I started going through people. I was like, oh my God, I know him. And he is so talented. You know, Sasha's here. I said, anyway, but it's also so hard. I could never do. Anyway, so we just start doing it in the back house or garage between the kids.
Yeah.
And we just started making this stuff. The kids want to do a rap video. And so we made one. It's a little dirty, but it's, you know, their mom wanted to send him to School of Rock Camp. And I said, hey, I am School of Rock Camp. I'm not going to, I made more movies than Jack Black. We're going to, but anyway, so this is the situation that's going on in our world. Well, let's take advantage of it. And, you know, and so, but, you know, this is, and by the way, when they grow up, and you know this, the kids are going to look back and say, what was going on in our lives way back when?
Yeah.
You're
brilliant in creating these, like, long-lasting memories and taking advantage of not just, you know, if you're going to be around them, be with them, right? And, like, having all these creative, if you have the advantage of growing up or and being parented by somebody creative like yourself, it's almost like you would feel like they'll look back at this and feel like it was a waste if you weren't doing these things. Cause like, man, we had Tom Arnold at our disposal to like create some fun and some different shit to do. And we didn't do it. So that's awesome that you're doing that. What is the rap video about? If you don't mind me asking,
the rap video is about this, Adam, ever since, you know, and I've heard from so many friends that have reached out, you know how people reach out because of the pandemic, like old girlfriends, I'm sure have reached out to you. The people you never thought you'd heard of, heard from again, old friends and stuff. Well, a lot of my old friends have reached out, including my old rabbi and they're all a lot of older men my age and said, hey, I haven't, listen, Tom, I wanted to see how you were doing and the kids and everything. And I saw that you, and I said, your assistant, what's going on there? She's living there. I'm, well, that's a nice, are you guys fucking? That's what they all ask. I go, wait a minute. Why would you ask me that? I said, she's here. We're just, you know, and they go, I didn't think so. You know, she's like 30 and you're 61. I go, no, we could be.
That's not why. Here. Yeah. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop, and then pick your candles, and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%! Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. and pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better. Start looking better. Start feeling better. Okay? Because everybody farts, and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode.
There's people that you and I both know that are these respected people in the community that ask me that. They go, so what's the deal? Are you guys I go, what the
shit? Yeah.
Why are you asking me? That's the only reason they call me. Not to see how I am, but so many people have called.
Crazy.
Still hey, so you would
only care about the drama.
Well, they also saw her and go, you know, she's very cute. Are you guys? I go, whoa! I thought you were calling about me and my children.
Yeah.
And I go, you know no, it's professional. But and they go, I didn't think that there's a million years that she would be with you. I go, what are you talking about? I invented. Hold on. It could happen.
Yeah.
We could be in the hall sometime and run into each other. I mean, don't say so. It began this whole thing of how many people pretend they're calling me to see about my well-being and the kids, and then it turns out they just want to know about my young assistant. You know, and then that's what the rap song's about.
That's amazing. You know, it'll get bad if your doctor calls and he's like, so what's going on there? You're like, dude, I thought you were calling me my COVID test results. He's like, yeah, those are. It's gonna take another week, but you could give me these results right now, baby. If you got the
yeah,
what?
Give me a little volume. Give me a little more volume.
Check. Yep.
Yep. No more. I can't for some reason. Did I go deaf or something?
Went down.
Your voice went down. Sorry, Adam.
Yeah, no, it's my fault.
Your podcast stuff is so damn.
Here we go. Check. There we go. That's better, huh?
It's also you do the political stuff. Nobody does that.
I mean, is that that's better? Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Way better.
Did you see the Trump music video that I did? Yeah, yes. You watched that?
Yes.
Billy Wright?
Because nobody does. I do political stuff because I'm active.
Yeah.
I work with the Biden campaign. I'm real, you know, I helped take Jerry Falwell to resign because I got
yes.
The deep of the wife and the him and the. I mean, I'm overt.
Right.
I get this lawyer, Michael Cohen, but you. It's so good and so, but you're as overt when you do comedy like that. That is art. That your Trump, your video stuff, and that is exactly the same thing. That's what we, you know, that's what we could do, that they can't because we are funny. You are funny, and people watch that and it goes in. And it's like, oh yeah, you know, and that's a really important thing right now. You know, I did work with the Biden comms people.
Oh, great.
And we're killing it. You know, we have these people that make these short videos every day that are really powerful, too.
Yeah.
And just different little groups every day and telling stories. And to get our comics, to get our artists to keep doing things like this, it is so effective and powerful. There's so many, you know, that's really what is, you know, and I say, hey, check this out. Check it. You know, I keep directing people to this stuff. This is what we do. We make art to speak
yeah.
up. You know,
yeah, I mean, I'm curious what your thoughts are because I know you've, you know, if you're a comic and you're, you know, taking a chance by voicing an opinion on something that could be, you know, garner some backlash. I feel like you've never had an issue with that. Have you always been kind of fearless in that way where you're like, this is what I think, I'm going to put it out there? Or did you have to kind of, you know, calculate at a certain point and go, all right, if I'm going to start doing this, I'm going to go all in? Because it definitely was a, you know, I didn't give too much thought into it because I was like, I think this is funny and this is what I think and I'm going to do this. But the enormous amount of, you know, people that disagree, that want to really aggressively let you know that in comment threads and then attack your character and everything about you. Go after, they'll dig through. And I always try to have funny responses and make jabs at their profile pics or things in their, you know, that are going on in their feed. But they are so angry and they're just like, stick to comedy, man. Nobody gives a fuck about your, about the other stuff. And it's like, dude, I'm a person first. Also, you know, isn't this a part of like, what you're so patriotic about is like having the freedom to kind of say and do what you wish as long as it's not hurting anybody. But you don't like that I'm, you know, and it's also the, it's so funny to me that I like even a video of Trump singing an Alanis Morissette song and a parody of it, like that really triggered them. It was like, what's going on with you where you couldn't even like find something in that to go, all right, well, you know, I don't agree with that he's making fun of my guy, but you know, there's something there that's kind of silly. So how do you deal with that?
Well, it's easy. I ignore them. They're trolls.
Yeah.
A lot of them are computer generated, but it's been,
they are.
You know, it does take a, you know, I got into a fist fight with Mark Burnett, who's the most powerful producer in Hollywood. You have to, and you got to ignore him. You know, Trump is, I've known him 35 years, but it is bad news. It's bad news for our country. As soon as he did the birther stuff, where he's like, Barack Obama, wait a minute. Okay. Sorry, he wasn't born here. And, you know, and I know Trump, and I've hung around him. I went to the Playboy Mansion with Donald Trump to meet his girlfriend.
God.
Even though I knew his wife was there and his kids. So, I, you know, he used to do my sports show, the best day of sports show, period. You know, Roseanne and I did an HBO special at Trump Castle 31 years ago, maybe. And he was always like, well, that he's, you know, he's fine. He, you know, I went to Elton John's pediatric AIDS benefit with my wife at the time and Melania and him, and we were social. But he was different, you know. But you do a sports show, you guys come on that show that you don't go, okay, do you ever cheat on your wife? You can't come on the show. It, you know, it's a different, you know, you don't really go through that list. But but he, you know, but the birther stuff, and I would never do Celebrity Apprentice. And when they ask you to come on that show, they say, here's the deal. It's $75,000 favor nation. And I think, well, I'm already famous. What is the, you to be, and then they make you a deal. They go, NBC will also offer you $250,000 to write a script and this stuff. But I couldn't get my head around what the, you become Donald Trump's like apprentice. And his I thought about it, you know, a few times. And I had a friend that ran NBC and I needed the money. But thank God I didn't do it. But and Mark Burnett and I were pretty close and trying to figure out something. But then he went on TV and said, hey, I need to see Barack Obama's birth certificate. This is 2011. And I thought, you know, that is such you know, Barack Obama, I don't care what your politics are. He is a great American success story. You know, this kid grew up without a dad. You know, and went to Harvard and became the president of the United States.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, like, and I thought, you know, if the first Jewish president, if someone came on TV and goes, wait a minute, time out, okay, I got a problem. I don't think that guy, I mean.
Check his penis, he's not circumcised.
People would fucking flip out.
Yeah.
And for him to be able to do that, and his wife, Melania, that's why I have no compassion for her either, to do that and continue to do it. So I. Yeah. You know, I wrote Mark Burnett. I called him at NBC, like, what are you doing about your guy? Like, he's on national TV doing this. This is unacceptable. And I said, he can't call my house anymore. Though this is very upsetting. And, you know, I've always been a Democrat and liberal, as they call it. But this was just, you know, over the top
of the line.
I ignored it. And it's being ignored it because Barack Obama is black. And in this country, black people are treated differently. You can see it with the police. It's just a fact.
Yep.
If I'm Jewish, and if he was Jewish, then believe me, the hammer would have been put down. He could not have run for president. That's for damn sure. So that happened. And then, you know, when he was running for president, you know, he torched all the Republicans. They're like, he is insane. He's racist. They all say it. And then he torches him with BS, and then they support him. So, yeah, I knew it was trouble. I also knew these tapes existed.
Yeah.
Where he's saying all this, the N-word and stuff. And I went to Mark Burnett, and I went to him, and I said, I need the my buddy produced The Apprentice. He's the man that spent the most time with Trump. And his brother was my clip producer on my sports show. I said to Mark Burnett, I need those tapes to show people what this guy really is. And he said, Trump wants them. You want them. I'm not giving them to either of you guys. But he will be presidential, I promise. What they, you know, goes on and on. He's a nightmare. He's terrible. And Mark Burnett and I end up in a – I mean, Mark Burnett chokes me at the big Katzenberg motion picture home party. And then we get – you know, I have to rip his gold Jesus chain off and throw down him. Now, Mark Burnett is a huge – He produces The Voice, all those shows. What does he produce? The big, you know, the one where you
double dare
Shark Tank and all these big shows. And but Mark Burnett is all in on Trump. And my thing about Trump is, you know, if you agree with every single thing, or if you're a man, a powerful guy like Mark Burnett and his wife, Selma Daly Jr. or Roma Daly, who are they're born again Christians allegedly. You could you have that much power, you could get in his ear because they talk every day and say, hey, the kids at the border thing seems a little cruel. Or one thing you disagree with or something, Survivor they have. Or whatever. Hey, I do Survivor. We could figure out, I can have 100 guys at the border helping you with those kids. We can put up a whole production down there. We could get them out of cages. We could do whatever. I could help. But no, these guys are all in. Nobody speaks up about Donald Trump. In fact, they're all in. And so I find that to be, and then they're making all this money with him. And Donald Trump still makes a lot of money from The Apprentice with a bunch of people in Hollywood. So a bunch of people that are liberals don't want to say too much. So I had this show, not for the Trump tapes.
Yeah.
And I confronted a bunch of liberals and they got very nervous because they go, oh, you were serious about confronting Donald Trump. And I said, absolutely. And I got together with some very good journalists from, you know, Jane Mayer from The New Yorker and you know, David Korn from Mother Jones and a bunch of people. I even sent somebody to Russia to interview the prostitutes who allegedly did the peep. I mean, I followed each tape that allegedly existed.
How'd you track down the prostitutes?
Because there's only one, quote unquote, madam, high class madam that works out of the Ritz-Carlton there where Trump was and where I actually lived in 2015, where Trump went in 2013 when he went for the Miss Universe pageant, when he tried to get Putin on board with him. And by the way, the guys he went with to that famous thing were my buddies. So there's a lot of Trump and I have a lot of people in common, which should disqualify you for being the president of the United States.
Yes.
And but anyway, so I've never been an activist before, but and I will tell you, it does hurt you, your work stuff. And but I can't imagine not doing what I do for my children because it is that all hands on deck thing. The fact that people attack you for your videos, ignore them because that is the thing about this. You're doing these videos, which are very funny. And if their side did funny videos, you and I would laugh about it.
Yeah.
We would laugh about it. If our but at Joe Biden, there's funny things about Joe Biden. There's funny things about our side.
Sure.
They attack, they threaten your life. They threaten my life, but I ignore them. I move past them and they're
good on you.
And if you track the servers, which I eventually got guys to track the servers, they don't even come from America. They're in Macedonia. And what happens is the Trump campaign there's a cruelty to it, and they scare people. They scare women. They scare a lot of people. And you just got to blast past this. Trump's thing and with all these women that came forward is to threaten to sue them. He doesn't sue anyone. It's bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And that's why I've been allowed to get so close with Michael Cohen, for instance. When he started wavering, I flew to New York to the Ricci Hotel, and I saw him there, and we took a famous selfie and said, hey, Michael Cohen's going to flip on Trump. And I didn't leave the hotel. Every time he came down the elevator, I said, I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to stay here. I'm not leaving. My buddy, the Trumps, owned that hotel until you get firmly say, I am flipping on Donald Trump, and I'm doing it for my family and for America. I'm going to be in this hotel, beat the shit out of you, and I'm serious. And I stayed there until he did that. Because nobody gets in these guys' faces.
No.
They're cowards. And yep. He did it. And we stayed friends, and you can hear the recordings I made and all the stuff I've done. Even in prison, I had cell phones to communicate with Michael Cohen, which is crazy. Now, that's how I got the Jerry Falwell wife pool boy tape. Now, I didn't do that because I disapprove of their sex lives. I did it because they're hypocrites. I did it because they're anti-LGBTQ, anti-Mexican. The guy's Mexican, this one. There's a bunch of pool boys. I did it because they're liars. They support Trump unconditionally. And I needed him to be out. I also did it because they got blackmailed into supporting Trump to begin with. They were going to support Trump, but Michael Cohen helped them out of a situation. He became a fixer for Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
Because somebody had pictures of his wife with this pool boy. And he said, hey, I'll help you. You can hear it all on the tape with Michael Cohen. I'll help you. And then he said, I'm going to need one favor, though. I'm going to need you to support Donald Trump in 2016. And you can hear Michael Cohen going, yeah, I helped him. I don't know what I have the pictures, but I still do have one picture. You know, and that. So anyway, he kind of puts the whole thing together. And my thing is always the truth. Now, there's 69 days left. You know, and I work with the Biden team. And some people are most of the people on the Biden campaign are very appropriate, of course. And they just want the facts. And when you hear the Republican convention, there's so many lies. And it's just about getting facts. I'm a very compassionate person. You know, I see there's this Black Lives Matter situation. When I did my show in 2018, I felt it was important. I felt like Black Lives Matter, the organization, was going to be a part of the narrative with Trump. So I interviewed, I'd be in at the Regency Hotel in New York, threatening Michael Cohen. Then I'd go out the side street there, and there's a kid named Del Rey who's a great activist, and he's affiliated with Black Lives and Ferguson's. I go outside and have him explain what all this means and how important this is in reference to Trump, in reference to America. And I learned a lot. You can watch that, and now it turns out it's very important. But I feel this is a time we can change everything. We can take advantage of how all in Trump is on his racism, his white supremacy, but we got to win this and we got to stick together. And, you know, so everything I do, I think I do to defend not only our Constitution and our country, I have to do that as a citizen, but I think for the point of view of women of color, because if you say, well, what do they fear? Well, they fear their kids going anywhere, you know, kids getting in cars. And you can see the NBA, you hear those players, why they boycotted last night and they're doing it again tonight. These guys that are so successful, these men, you hear congressmen, senators, first of all, they get pulled over all the time, but yeah. They have to tell their sons, hey, listen, you get in the car, don't do anything. If a cop pulls you over and he throws you on the ground and starts kicking you, don't do anything. If you go to the hospital, I'll get you to the hospital. I just want you home. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That does not happen to white kids. And that's a problem. And that's something that you don't hear the president of the United States address.
No.
Because I know his lawyer of 10 years, he feels the opposite. He feels their people are treated like less than in this country. And that's what, and it's going to be worse if he's elected. And we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I care about that. And anybody that disagrees with me and threatens me, or you, Adam, they are monsters.
Wow, dude. Is there anything you're not passionate about that you couldn't talk about for at least 15 minutes with any stranger? Because the first time I met you, which I think was at Michael and Ira Smith's Break the Fast party up in the hills, and you were so kind to me, you know, I just did the thing that any young comic does when they look up to somebody and they're like, you know, wanting to, all I wanted to do was get a couple lines with you, shoot the shit, maybe hear a classic story, because I know you've just, you're so generous with your experiences and such a brilliant storyteller. So I was like, man, I was telling my buddy when I was going up there, I was like, all I want is maybe a little bit of like stand, I'm not going to ask for straight up stand-up advice, but if I can, I feel like he would give it to me if we can get a little rapport. And that's exactly what happened. You busted my balls as soon as I was up there, because I think I gave, you gave a toast. I think I gave a little toast because Iris was like, we've got a comedian here. And I was like a couple years removed from college. I'm like, Iris, I'm, you know, I'm just now, I'm still doing open mics, but you know, but she put me up on this pedestal because she's so sweet. And so I'm giving some, you know, bullshit Rosh Hashanah speech. And then you stood up and you kind of slammed me in a sweet way and then gave a much better speech and a much funnier one. And I remember Michael was like, ah, next, someday you'll be able to give a break the fast speech like Tom Arnold. And I was like, God damn it. But then you, and then we and then we started shooting the shit, and you gave me a lot of great, you know, I'll never forget. You said a couple things that really resonated, which was you were like, I can tell that you want it. And you're like, and you're like, don't lose that, like, fire that you have and going for it, and don't let you know, whether it's people that that maybe question you know, your work ethic or how hard you're going for stuff, or you know, you said something about sacrificing, you know, like social stuff, and that really resonated, because there was a handful of, you know, post college, everyone's hanging out still and trying to just getting into their groove, but with comedy, I was like, man, I got to go all in, so I was skipping so many hangs, and you were like, don't feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that, man. But then we gabbed for a little bit, and I was like, and then you got distracted by some matzah, and I was like, God, if I could have, I was like, man, I could have literally said any keyword and he would have gone on for an hour.
Well, I tell you, and I was telling Sasha too when I was checking out podcasts, and I knew you had a podcast, but I was like, again, I'm gonna say it, I was like, holy shit, do you know what Adam Ray does? Do you know how hard, do you know how good he is? Because, again, sometimes when you meet someone at the friend's place,
yeah,
you go, okay, yeah, you know, he has a podcast, I met him, he's a friend of, and I go, oh, my God, he is so fucking talented. he works so hard, and he puts it out there, and he's like his own network. I'm telling you, Sasha knew. It's like, I know that. I go, no, but I didn't know that. I know this kid. I know this kid. Look, I got really
He
just kept this cool over here and see this. Yeah. And it's so good and so varied. And so he's a factory. We don't have to do that, do we? I can't do that. But I genuinely mean it, Adam.
Thanks, man.
And I tell you, I'll tell you what, respect. As comedian, it's like you've been in it for – this is the ultimate respect I have for you. And I've been in your shoes here. And this is, Roseanne and I used to talk about this because we both have done shows like this. And this is no disrespect, but you did when the shows aren't like, if you open for a band, Rosie went on the road with Julio Iglesias in the day when we were buddies, you know, probably 1985. And, you know, sometimes they don't want to see a comedian. But you got to fill up the time. Julio Iglesias was so funny. And I loved him so much. This back, but sometimes the audience is like, we want to see Julio. Or, you know, you just got to feel like there's technical problems.
Yeah.
You have to come out. Now, you did, our friend Michael Smith, who's the prince, he's a prince, and their family love each other so much. And they're so, you know, I've seen them all grow up. And this show had the most talent I've ever seen in my life.
Ever.
Ever.
Kermit the Frog was fucking, you know, at the intermission point.
It was crazy. And my buddy in Toronto who helped book it was crazy. The level of talent.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't even, I saw a bunch of people afterwards and they're like, yeah, it was just insane.
Yeah, Leno, Estefan, Jennifer Hudson, Usher, Stevie Wonder, Andrea Bocelli.
Yeah, who else? I mean, who? Just on and on and on.
Michael Bolton, Kenny G. Yeah.
The whole cast of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
They recreated the whole fuck. They did the, I was
weekend
like,
update,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
And just on it. You can't even. Anyway, so. Plus, you know, Jay Leno was as a comic. And so you were the, what were you, what was your?
Well, I was just supposed to do like 5 minutes after Bocelli, bringing up Stevie Wonder. Because, you know, nothing says let's segue out of Bocelli like a little Jewish kid from North Seattle. So, but then they said Freddie Yonai, you know, brilliant harmonica player, had something going on up top, and it, it there was a little sound issue. But before that, there was a magician that was supposed to kind of cold open the whole show, and something happened. And so Kaylee texts me, she's like, "You got to just pop up." And as people start signing on, just be doing basically like it's the equivalent to being walking out on a show at like Radio City Music Hall, maybe. And it's an hour before showtime and people are still just taking their seats. And I'm just like watching squares pop up and being like, "Hey, Howard Hirschbaum, is that your real yarmulke? All right, who else is here?"
There's a lot of like ladies in their closets too. I know. And I tell you, the night went on, they got just hammered. But there was Usher danced.
Yeah.
That was a fun. I love that. I was sitting here trying to learn. But there was a live, I don't know if it was Kaylee, but they're doing a live performance. And the live performance with this artist, who I'm sure you know who they are, but there was so much riding on that live, going to them. And here we go. They check. You can tell they're ready to go. You hear them. And then it was signed. And then I know it's once it came back to you and you had to come back out. And people were so jazzed up for that artist. And then it's you like, okay. But it was, I don't know if you can see what I was texting or writing to you.
I didn't see. What did you say?
I'm writing nasty boo. I was heckling you from that nasty stuff.
I loved it, dude. Because you know what that did? It made me feel very at home because it was just like, this is what a comic should be doing to another comic. When you're the only one that recognized like that, in that moment, that how awful it was that I had to jump back in right there.
Yeah. There's one other person that recognized it, Michael Smith.
Of course.
Michael Smith is a fan. He's a fan of comedy from the old days in Denver. Oh, yeah. And there's a guy named Michael Floorwax who started comedy in Denver way back. And Michael used to go out, and he loves stand-up comedy. I just gotta say this.
He's sharp, too.
He got up and walked out. He wasn't there. You know, the girls in his family are so excited. And at one point, he was on screen a few times when they're like, "Yeah, Michael, we love you." And he's like, okay. Like, it was out so long. He was out. He was back in.
Yeah.
But it was, he gets it. And it was a brilliant thing to hang in there. And again, I told Sasha, I'll tell you what, they're comic. They're like, here he comes back again from the Hamptons. A lot of people were in the Hamptons, by the way. They were friends. Yeah, they were like, and by the end, I don't know if you stayed till the end.
I said by the end, there was like, party,
everybody, most of the gals that had a bunch of drink there, their closets, said I was really writing them some stuff like, "Hey, are you sick?" Like, you know, they were just like.
Oh, yeah, I did see. It was just turned into a pajama party. And DJ
Khaled
was
just,
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000
U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, available worldwide. And again, there's four ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more. Unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in. There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable. All right, it's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code About Last Night. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to BetterHelp.com/About Last Night. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's BetterHelp.com/About Last Night. BetterHelp.com/About Last Night. And get 10% off your first month with promo code About Last Night. And now, back to the episode.
Have you even had any interest in doing like a virtual show, or are you kind of waiting to see how these drive-in shows pan out? Where's your level of need to perform right now, and how much do you miss it? Because I remember about a month in, maybe it was 2 months in actually, I heard Bill Burr talking about how he's like, man, I've been on the road for 30 years. I don't fucking miss it. And I was like, I wonder if that's the case with guys who've been doing it for a little bit, where they're like, am I kind of enjoying a little break? But when is that break going to feel monotonous and you're going to have that burning desire or a need to just get out of the house or to talk about stuff that you're probably, after a while of just letting your brain rest, you're probably starting to have the wheels turn to where you need to get on stage and perform, yeah?
Well, I mean, I, because we do a podcast.
Yes.
You know,
Doing the Bush.
Stuff is a lot of me telling, you know, because she's 30 years younger, there'll be topics that all kind of, or she'll tell, you know, her. She's in it. It's a totally different world that she apparently grew up in. And we kind of go back and forth. There's a lot of communication that way. I need to get on the road to make some money to earn a living. It always feels good. I always say, well, I kind of am hesitant, but then you get out there and you go, oh, that's why I do it. And, you know, I have a movie coming out, so I know that's going to be, okay, I have to go out there and interviews, and we got to figure out how people are going to watch that. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, but I'm not like, oh, I'm not a road dog. And I got to, cause I do miss my kids. So it's a weird, I mean, I'm grateful that I'm at home, but I do want to get back out and do that kind of stuff. And I think I also want the country to open up. I mean, it's scary how different things are because of this pandemic. It is scary that a year ago there people didn't have to wear masks, and what's really going on, it is frightening. And so you want to get, I do agree with Trump. I want to get everything going. I want my kids in school,
yes,
but it's safe. I'm not going to take his word for it, but you know, you want to get things back to whatever normal is. And you want to get things up and going, and they will. And you know what? We will get back to the same human experience that we had before. People will be in clubs. People will be dying to get in clubs. People will be dying to sit with each other and laugh and be close to each other. It's not always going to be 6 feet. They're going to be touching each other and hugging each other. They may have masks. They may be a little different. Maybe not. Knowing Americans, everybody, you know, but it's going to be a little bit. But we're going to get back to this, to what we do. It's just going to take a little bit, you know. Yeah.
It is weird to see movies now and see people hug, and I get nostalgic. I'm like, oh man, remember those days? You know, but it will get back to it. I got to say, you and Sasha's dynamic is really great. Like, I was watching some episode the other day, and you guys were talking about, like, you were saying how there's a version of Arnold Schwarzenegger in every country. I can't remember what episode that was.
I did. She was so excited to meet him. Like, we saw him, we're down at, you know, I represent myself in court, Sasha's my assistant in court. I was finishing up in court. We had a very successful day. And she was in the waiting in the SUV, and Arnold rode by on his bike, you know, he's at his bike. And she's like, oh my God, I had something just happened. I think it's a sign. I go, what? Arnold Schwarzenegger just rode by his bike. I go, well, his office is right over here. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So then he FaceTimes, you know, because, you know, we FaceTime because he's, it was his birthday. And I FaceTimed him a couple days late, but he loves the kids, you know.
Yeah.
And then I say, you got to meet Sasha. She thinks that, what happened? You're very excited.
Yeah, who wouldn't be? And who wouldn't be excited to see fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger on a goddamn bike? I don't care who you are.
He was,
holy shit.
He was wearing a helmet?
No.
No, he wasn't.
Just living on the edge.
Oh. Yeah, well, here's the thing. I take Jax. So the first time, you know, he was the first person in the delivery room with Jax's board. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, and he's like, oh my God, you know. And he smelled his hand. He's like, oh my God.
I feel
God.
Like that should be like a Snapple Cap trivia. Like that little fact should be like, who was the first person to be in the delivery room with Tom Arnold's son?
Well, and then I did take Jax over. And he's like, we're swimming if you want to come over. So I took him over. And it honestly was. When we tagged Rolf Moeller, who is a giant Arnold of Germany, there is an Arnold Schwarzenegger of every country. I did a movie with the Arnold Schwarzenegger of Russia in 2015. There is one everywhere. He is that, you know, you have friends that are famous. I have friends that are famous, but nobody is Arnold Schwarzenegger famous.
Fuck no.
Maybe Sly, Sylvester Stallone, but that's very famous, where there's people that are that person of another country everywhere. Yeah. You know, so, but you know, we did FaceTime, we had to FaceTime the kids, and then Sasha was here. He asked me, hey, what's the deal with you and your assistant? Are you good? And I'm like, no, but I could. Yeah. Anyway, somebody was very kind to Sasha.
That's awesome.
He's like, her story.
He said I was beautiful.
Yeah, he did.
Whoa.
She was at, and he was very kind. He acted very interested in her story.
He was.
About him riding his bike by his office. But what's funny is when I came out to get in the car, she's like, I almost stopped him. I go, don't stop him when he's riding his bike. Well, to tell him that I worked with Tom Arnold. They go, don't stop him. You know how many people want to stop Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's riding his bike?
Everybody.
Can you imagine?
But those people don't have Tom Arnold coming out of the car.
No, we don't. We don't.
Yeah.
That'd be a horrible thing to do.
Wait, what's going on with his, do you follow, I'm sure you watch him on Instagram then, yeah? He's been one of my favorite accounts during this pandemic. I mean.
So good.
He's so good. When he was just even doing like washing your hands and with my llama, and I was just like, I could watch Arnold washing hands with his household zoo animals for hours. I sent it to my dad. My dad was like, this is the best shit I've ever seen. And he was got a llama and what else? He has a,
he's
is
got
a donkey?
A whole zoo. He's got the mini horses. They're 24/7. In the back, he's got like a stable. And, you know, Arnold didn't grow up with animals. So he's like, but the horse,
video of him riding a bicycle to exercise the mini horses. I watched that 10 times.
Oh my God.
Thank you for something.
Yeah.
Posted a video on your Instagram of a naked man, which I think was on drugs.
And yes. Oh my God. That's so great.
Is it protesting?
The guys come up to fight.
He's butt naked.
Oh yeah.
I put that out there.
My grandmother, if she was alive.
That became.
It was my bread and butter for
I said it to all the people.
Oh my
God. No, it was. Hold on. We dissected all the people that do what I do that are, you know, whatever. We dissected every person in that video to where they were like, okay.
Oh, there were a lot of characters to break down.
Am I going to have to fight? And we all broke it down like, okay, this dude.
What would you do? It's a great dude. What would you do? If that guy's coming at you, do you run the other way or do you like?
You don't run. You just got to you got to be ready to go, man. But you know, again, I grew up on in a small town with a bunch of crazy people. But you got that guy's ready. You just got to be ready to go. But we broke every person. I took it. We took it, blew it up. I looked at every person. That guy's coming in hot.
People do that.
Of course he's laughing.
But then he protects himself at the same time.
You got
time.
It. That's
so
the guy.
He's laughing and protecting
you do
himself.
That. You got it.
His dick is just. Oh.
No.
Didn't he also kind of hesitate at the crosswalk for a minute and then bolted? Yeah. I was like, dude, if your dick is out, you don't need to wait for a green.
That's how you think. That's the weird. That's how you think. That's weird. Like, it was so great. You know,
thank you so much.
You know, I've been, you know, I got arrested a bunch of many times.
Oh, man, I'm kind of jealous.
once was naked and for public nudity in an old folks home. And the reason I got arrested, well, the reason I got taken to jail, Dick, is because my buddies, who you know my buddies, we jumped in the back of the squad, our car, to put our shorts on.
Yeah.
And it was so crowded in the back because we're big, fat guys. And we were rubbing asses. I said, I'm going to step, the cops have got us. I'm going to step out of the car and put my underwear on like a fucking human being. And the cops grabbed me and handcuffed me behind my back. That's how I lost my job at the meatpacking plant. That's it.
At Hormel?
At Hormel. Because if you run naked through an old folks home in a small town and get arrested, it'll be in the paper, etc.
Yeah, it's big news.
But it's always that little, but that guy did hesitate. But that was, I forgot it was Adam, but that, man, she yeah. said it to her family and had tons of fun. I said it to all, we all broke it down.
Said it
like,
to Mo?
Oh, I said it to everybody. But I also said it to all the Biden people, like, let's break down. And also there's a couple activist hackers that we sent down, like, let's break this situation down.
There. Oh, yeah. People, the amount security. Of captions that I was, you know, contemplating over, too, because it's like with a video. It's so crazy to think, I mean, that, you know, that you get to a certain age and you're like, I can't believe I haven't seen that yet. And yeah. I just like, I'm watching this and I'm like, I've seen people streak before and whatnot, but yeah. like not be running out buck naked looking to kick some ass.
Right. And what happened before that? That's what we're trying to figure out.
Oh,
I don't think it was people just guess PCP. You just don't know.
Also, what if he, you know, was at some girl's place, guy came back, he had to sprint out the door, and he's like, all right, I'm buck naked and I'm gonna have to run home. So to avoid looking like a crazy person, why don't I just start running into the street and try to act like I'm fighting people? And everyone goes, this guy's on drugs. He's like, yeah, I definitely wasn't at some girl's house. I was fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if somebody bet him that he wouldn't do it.
There it is. Yeah. But isn't it is also there. I mean, thank God for videos like that. I don't know if you guys have like a go-to show or account that you go to if you're like, man, I need a quick bump of some joy.
Rex Chapman called
dude, home run.
Locker Charge. He's a buddy of mine. He has really good stuff on there. He used to play for the Kentucky. He was a Kentucky Wildcat basketball player, played the pros, and he has Blocker Charge, I think is what his
yes.
account is. And he's a pretty solid guy. But who do you go to?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, there's a lot of the influencers in the wild. I'm unfortunately, like, It's like a hate watch. It's like, I just posted one today of there's a girl who set up a stripper pole on a beach and has her friend videotaping her doing God knows what. So it's just people getting caught that are just trying to take really, really trying to put provocative stuff online. They're getting caught, or if they're posing in the middle of traffic, or like that girl in Portland who was buck naked sitting down in front of the police, stuff like that. But there's an account that my buddy runs, or where the guy in New York, he holds up the signs. Have you seen him?
Yeah.
He's like, really, it's just kind of like, you know, play on words, fun.
There's a lot of people that when they have these protests, they'll be completely from the other side and they'll come in and do a stunt. Sort of an anti-police stunt,
yeah.
That is totally intended to make it look like the peaceful protesters did it or whatever, and they're sent in to do these video stunts. They film it and then they put it online, like, "Oh my God, look what is happening there!" And then, you know, you and I can tell when it's fake. But those idiots that write you and go, "Shut up, don't ever," they're like, "Oh my God, look what the lefties are doing," or
yeah.
You know, and then you get these conspiracy people like QAnon. They're like, "Oh my God, what do they call Hollywood? Pedowood."
Oh yeah.
You know? Oh my God.
Like, trying to throw Tom Hanks into a pedophile.
Mean, like, oh yeah, he's in there. Yeah, he was on Jeffrey Epstein's flight log.
Yeah.
All those, Roseanne is in that.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
Are you in it?
In what? No, in QAnon. She's in QAnon.
I didn't know if you were on a list of maybe pedophiles.
They always say, "Tom, you know that your time is near. I hear you're on a log."
Oh my God!
Maybe I'd so
lock you.
I, you know, bring it.
Tom, do you have a piece? I love these types of calls. Obviously, hopefully we can all do this in person when things clean up. But is there something, you know, you've obviously chosen a great backdrop for your show and for right now. Is there something that you've collected over the years? I'm always curious when people have these, like, and I'm glad that you have done such a diligent job of holding on to things and, you know, achievements and accomplishments. And it's a great, I mean, I can see so much dope shit. It's fun to probably walk through. I'm sure you get to a certain point where it's just, you know, your background and you're not even taking a look. But are there things that you walk by? What's the last thing you've walked by that triggered a memory that you hadn't thought about in a while and you were like, God damn, that was a good time, or that brought up some story?
Well, I was, they had all the ESPN's played all the classic games on, yes, you know, and it was the kids were asleep. I was, and they still sleep in my bed. I was sitting in between them. Horrible. And I was watching David Wells, who pitched for the Yankees.
Yeah.
They're playing San Diego in the World Series.
Yes.
And I was watching him pitch. And what World Series was that? Was it 98? I can't remember what World Series.
You're,
and I
was about right.
And I was like, wait a minute. That hat he has on, I have the hat that he wore pitching in that World Series, and a ball, and it's in the other room.
Holy,
and I'm like,
shit.
It's under. Oh shit! I have. He gave me that when they won the series in San Diego. He took it off my hands. Me and Charlie Sheen sat in his locker.
Holy
shit! And both of us. He gave me his hat and the ball, and gave Charlie Sheen his sweaty undershirt, which, you know, I was in David Wells' wedding, Boomer Wells, and I have that. Oh shoot, I gotta get that. I was just watching the game, like, this is, I love watching those classic games.
Oh, they're the best.
And I was like, shit, I got that. And then I came out here on Twitter and started tweeting at him and tweeting at other people that had been there. I hadn't even thought about that. Now back there, this is when you have kids, here's the thing. You save this stuff and you have this memorabilia.
Yeah.
And then you have kids, you get a certain age, and the kids destroy it. But what? Well, who cares? What are you getting? What am I going to do with this stuff?
Yeah,
because that's what you have stuff for. Now there's a football somewhere. Where's the Iowa football? It might be in the house. Is there a Brown football? I have a football. It's the only football like this that exists. The 1939 Iowa Hawkeyes, signed by everyone, including Niall Kinnick, our only Heisman Trophy winner.
Wow.
But Edwin Pracy, another All-American. It's signed by every member of the Hawkeyes, the only one that exists. Niall Kinnick died training for World War II. He's a war hero. Everybody, and I have it, I had it under glass somewhere. Now it's.
Wait, this is 1939.
Yeah, that's it right there. Okay, this football, and it had never been touched, and it's sealed, and I got it from his family. I mean, I had went through a lot. It's very, very valuable, expensive. And then one day, this case was empty back there. And I was like, "Hey, has anybody seen that football?" And my son, I go, "Have you seen that football?" He goes, "Yeah, I kicked it over that the wall there." And the neighbors a couple of days ago, "Where did you kick it?" It was in their pool, and I had to get it fished out. And I realized nothing really matters, because you have kids, and you know,
it's like in the Sandlot. The kid took his dad's ball signed by the Yankees to go play Sandlot baseball with. That's fucking crazy.
Then she had the kids watch Sandlot.
Oh,
she,
good call.
She picks a what'd movie
they
for them, and you know,
they wanted to know where all the parents were.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't understand why they didn't have parents watching at all.
And when you watch it, you're like, oh, you're right. They're all latchkey kids.
Oh yeah.
You can't do that anymore. Isn't that insane?
You can't. I showed my nieces, they're twin 11-year-old girls. I showed them Beetlejuice last year.
Oh my god, Beetlejuice is
for
so
the
good.
First time.
Oh.
They fucking loved it, and it made me so happy.
Your daughter was when I showed them.
My son, you know, I belong to this group, Every Town, which is, the Mike Bloomberg, the gun safety and common sense gun stuff. And I had to take Conan O'Brien, is one of our big people, and Bob's awesome. Demand to Action. My friend Shannon Watts is a great, great woman that started this organization, and Conan O'Brien hosted our big board member thing this year. And it was around Halloween, and I couldn't get a sitter. I got Quinn covered. I couldn't get somebody to cover Jax. I had to take Jax to Conan's house, and we were sitting on the couch in the front, and we had these people that are big donors, and there's some very, you know, they got to ask the main people that are big, you know, questions, and there's some, you know, and people, you know, people are a little shook up.
Yeah.
And they're going around the room. Jax is a big kid. He's antsy. And this lady is just like, I think every day they should just have pictures of people being shot in the newspaper or whatever. And they said, so Jax, what do you want to be? Your dad's so involved with this. What do you want to be when you grow up? Jax is like, a sniper. And I was like, oh, no, but he wants
something else, quick.
Good, so if we're on our team, though, because he has, you know, at a certain point, you know, you go, okay, just Nerf guns that are brightly colored.
Yes.
You can't. And he loves my movies. I haven't got in a lot of movies.
I was going to ask, when they got to the age where they could watch, you know, True Lies is in my top 10 of all-time movies, and I'm sure it is for a lot of people. At what point could they watch that? And then also, what was the first thing when they're at an age to soak it up? Were you like, when they said, hey, what can we watch? Did you say, this is first?
Well, I never asked them to watch anything. And I think honestly, they weren't aware. I think when, you know, and I'm not saying this to be negative, but until their mom moved out, they weren't aware as much about that I was in the movies. And then I was cleaning out my office and had hundreds of, and you can see in my son's office, first of all, I have hundreds of my autobiography that nobody bought. So I put that, those are the, she'll back me up.
What's it called? Let's plug it right now.
No, I'll write a new one. I wrote it to my future children.
I'll write a new autobiography is my new favorite sentence of 2020.
Yeah, it's called How I Lost 5 Pounds in 6 Years. That is a good title. But
that's the title?
Yes.
I just made a joke last week about how I'm down 45 pounds since 1995. Well, that's so funny, Tom.
There you go. But anyway, I threw about, you know, I had hundreds of VHS of my movies. I've been in 130 movies. I threw them. But I was cleaning out the garage, just cleaning out the closet. I don't need all that stuff.
Yeah.
And my assistant came in and he goes, oh my God, you won't believe what's happening. Jax, who was 5 at the time, was hauling it all out of the dumpsters up to his room. And you can see it on my social media. That's my book right there. And I wrote this before I had kids, so I wanted to write a new one. And he'd hauled it up to his room. And my in-laws were in the house at the time. And first of all, he built a wall facing them, which I videotaped. It was in the fall of 2019 or whatever. I've had to, because they were like this. And my son built this wall facing them with that ugly picture on it. And you just, as a dad, it's one of those moments that you, there's two greatest moments I had as a dad. When he built the wall facing my in-laws, and then my daughter came in and said, you know, our dad was king. And I ran in there and go, what? And she had coins because I was King Bacchus at Monte Carlo. And they go, well, King Bacchus at Monte Carlo, which they like to say because there's coins.
My
you know.
God.
And then the other great moment was I went to a school. They were playing the teachers, the kids. And Donald Faison is his coach behind home plate, you know, from Scrubs.
Oh, yeah.
And Carlton, the kids, it's Carlton from Fresh Prince.
Oh, Alfonso Ribeiro, yeah.
Yeah, they're very nice guys. Their kids are wonderful. And my son is very large. He's a big kid. And he hates, you know, he hits T-balls up, which isn't real. But he hits a lot of home runs and then gets mad that he has to run the bases. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And we got there, and there was a missed schedule, and I didn't even know there was a game, and I heard it last minute, and I got there, and Bob wasn't there, and I got there, and then he was all excited to see me come there, and he got up to play, and Donald Faison was like, hey, listen, they were pitching, he said, now, just, you don't have to swing at the first one, and Jax turned around and saw me, and hit it over the top of the school.
Oh,
and
my God.
Of course, I filmed it. It was just that great, you know, and then Donald made him run the bases. But, you know, one of those just, you know, as a dad, it's over, you know. And so I had that moment. So anyway,
that's so sweet.
Anyway, they took all these movies of mine out of the trash. So he still got them in his room. We're trying to fit them out.
Yeah.
But we had – I didn't tell him what he could have watched. There's a couple. There's one where I play a pedophile called Guardians of the Night. But it's not overt, but it is, you know, Kevin Zegers and I, it's a very dramatic, John Malkovich is the good guy. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
But, it won a bunch of awards. It's good. But, you know, I saw him starting to watch that. He goes, hey, Dad, I have trouble remember what movie that is. And he's like, are you gonna kidnap that dog? And I was like, oh, yeah, son, I don't think this movie I can tell, because you can see me like asking this kid about their song. I don't think this will be good. He goes, I really like this movie, but anyway, I came in one day and he was misbehaving at dinner at lunch. He was complaining about the food. I said, and I never do this. That's it. This is what we're eating. Go up to your room. And and his sister always like that. Yeah, he was bad, Dad. Then she goes up with him. She'll tell you that. And then I walk by their room, and I always feel bad. I've never let them go to bed without. And I walk by his room, and they're sitting there. And I'd gotten him a VHS, a TV, and a VHS player, whatever you call it, VCR.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're both laying on the bed watching True Lies. As I walked by to the door, and I stuck my head back in there, and my daughter looked at me like that was the first time I ever seen him doing it. But I thought, these guys are so much smarter than me. They're watching that movie. My daughter looks at me like that. So, of course, I went in there and watched it with them. But he likes the action movies. And my daughter likes the really young Camp Fred or silly stuff. She wants to know how things, if I really had my face blown off. And then we try to recreate it. She has very specific questions about, you know, why did I have another family? And I explained to her this and this and this. And, you know, and my son's like, well, why was Arnold Schwarzenegger young in this movie? Or why were, you know, because I always seem sort of the same age, but they'll ask specific questions about other people and time and space. And, you know, but she's always curious about when you got stung by that bee, was there a real bee? And why did your face really, you know, and I think you take for granted that they just understand things. If they see you on TV, you know, and I at first when they started seeing me and things, I heard them telling their friends, my dad is Tom Arnold. You know, not like that's my dad. My dad, like, they were surprised. Like, did you know my dad was Tom Arnold? Like,
man, that's so cool.
Yeah. But, you know, I also, that they make films themselves and they don't want to show me. And Sasha will tell you this. Oh, they don't like to show me their TikToks. They don't let, but they.
Yeah, not until they're ready.
It's very personal. They'll make it with Sasha, but they're very, you know, you want this world, and you live in it more than me, the way you create things, the way you put your content out there. You know, when Roseanne and I started, 45 million people a week watched that show. The first time I was on it, I think 47 million.
Holy
there was three
shit.
Networks, four networks. Fox had just started. That was it. And now you guys get your, you know, my son watches YouTube, my daughter, and this Mr. Beast guy, that's one of my favorites. This guy, he must have a budget of $1 million a week. He does stunts, and he's hooked up to some kind of thing called Honey that pays his – it's a shopping app or something. I watch these shows like – and my kids are – my son's mesmerized.
Yeah.
And he goes and they have toys or stuff, and there's families. We went and met this guy. Ryan's big surprise, or this kid named
Ryan. yeah opens just, toys or some shit. What is
he used to review toys, and that now he's got a show. We went and met him and his family, very nice family, and Ryan's surprise playhouse or something. I mean,
do the parents do anything, or they're just like, no, we just wait for our kid to be surprised and then we tape it? Oh, they are, okay.
Yeah, but they just like his love it. They have a show but they do, you know, they're
If my 6-year-old nephew, if I told him he could join the cast of Fortnite, he would leave his family.
Yeah, that's it.
There's he would walk out the door chasing the naked guy through the streets, take me to the Fortnite kingdom, you crazy dick out man. Yeah.
No, I hear this a lot from my son. It's really not that violent that I watch. I'm like, but all games are first person shooter games. Even my daughter's play games with balls, you know, she's blasting through some kind of a wall, and but they play with their cousins. Their cousins are all of a sudden talking to them from Denver, and then there's a kid from Tel Aviv. But people sign up, they kind of go into a lottery, and then all of a sudden there's 10 kids from all over the world.
Yeah,
that they're playing, cool. And they don't even realize how far away there, they go, okay, so Colorado, or where is this place? Or, and you see the kids that we always check about, make sure they're, but they're like,
yeah,
it's like, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if they were like really actively interested in getting to know the people on these gaming things. And like, I don't know how much dialogue they're actually exchanging. It's probably all about the game, but if it was like, what's it like in Tel Aviv right now? Like, oh, it's pretty chill. Like, what's going on in Palm Springs? Oh, you know, pretty much the opposite of Tel Aviv. But, you know, so what's you guys watch? You guys watching Dr. Pimple Popper out there in Jerusalem?
Yeah.
I do want to tell you real quick. And by the way, thanks for doing this. This was really a treat. And the podcast, I do want to tell people, Two in the Bush. You can watch it on YouTube, which is where I've been watching it. And but all audio platforms, wherever you get podcasts, right? I guess that's the plug at this point. You just go, fucking at this point, if you don't know how to access a podcast, then podcasts aren't for you, or you're one of my mom's friends from Temple Beth Am. I was watching, I don't know if it was HBO, Tom, or TNT, but it was about 2 weeks ago, and Nine Months came on.
Yeah. And,
Tom, it is one of your most underrated performances, dude. I love that movie, and then you're just like, dude, that movie doesn't fall into more of a comedic category if you're not in it.
Yeah, that was very fun.
Oh, dude, you crushed it. Do you have, because I feel like that was, and I'm watching it being like, man, Hugh, you know, and then it just makes me go, God damn, like Hugh Grant had a string of just this guy in like 10 movies, which I feel like is, you know, I guess the goal, if you just to go, all right, I found a guy that people want to see again and again in different circumstances, was he, I feel like you're fun to work with on set always. And one of my buddies was an AD on, I think it was Hit and Run, the Dax, Mike Brynas. Do you know Mike Brynas?
Yeah, remember him?
He was an AD on there, and he just had nothing but sweet praises for you and would, you know, tell me stories daily about it. Had you met Hugh Grant before that? Do you go out of your way to try to chum it up, or do you just go, he's the lead, I'm going to, okay.
He just had Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Right.
And I just had True Lies. And Chris Columbus directed that.
Oh, man.
And Chris Columbus is so good. And Joni Cusack, of course,
played
my wife. I love her so much. And Julianne Moore is great. And we, you know, it was great fun. Hugh and I got along. We hung out. Robin Williams, you know, we filmed in San Francisco where Robin Williams lives. So, you know, we had a lot of fun. You know, Hugh got arrested with the prostitute while we were promoting the movie.
Right.
And I tell a lot of stories about that, but you know, I'll tell you one real quick.
Yes.
So Hugh, this one she likes. So Hugh is very funny. And first of all, I made him so nervous. So, you know, cause I punched that dinosaur in the toy store fight, the stuntman in there, the stunt coordinator's like, okay, you can punch him anywhere you want, except right here. The eyes are actual metal. So don't hit him in the eyes, because that's the only place that's not padded. So anyway, we get going in the thing, get going, I get excited. And I was like, he said something about the eyes. So I hit the stuntman as hard as I could right in the eye, and it cut his eye so deep here. It knocked him out. And it's, you know, stuntmen are like, they go, you've got to give him the hospital. He's like, no, I got to finish the scene. Just stitch me up or give me some. They brought him up smelling salts. He finished the scene. So Hugh Grant saw that, this guy. So we got to the liver scene at the end. There's a scene where my character is supposed to punch Hugh Grant. By now, Hugh Grant and I have hung out a lot.
Oh, great.
And something happened in the middle, which made Hugh Grant think, I'm going to get even with you. Because in the middle of that, there had been two movies about Tom and Roseanne's divorce. And one was on ABC, or one was on NBC, and then the second was on Fox. Now, Fox TV, this was a Fox movie, much like True Lies was. So when it was announced that Fox TV was doing a Tom and Roseanne, whatever movie, Hugh Grant came to me and said, that's outrageous. We are doing a Fox movie. And they're going to, you got it. That is outrageous. That is so disrespectful of you. that they would do a Fox movie while we're filming this movie after you killed it in True Lies. That is, I can't believe they would do that to you. I think that you got to, that is so disrespectful.
Wow.
And anyway, and it really got to me, like, right, I was feeling very low. And he said, listen, man, come over here. It was Saturday night. He said, come over here to my, we're staying in Napa Valley. We each had these big bungalows. He said, come over here, man. This is the most, that's the most fucked up thing I've ever heard of. And I've been in showbiz a long time. And I walked into his bungalow and the lights are on. Everybody was there to watch the Tom and Roseanne movie. He hosted a party so every cast member could watch. He had a, got a giant screen brought in and he had Tom and Roseanne and balloons to watch it. That's how big of an asshole. Anyway, so then I had to sit there and watch it and it was awful. But so at the end of the movie, we're doing the fight scene. It's Rob Williams. You know, all the actor, all the main cast is in the shooting, the delivery scene where my both of our wives, Juliette and Jody, are giving birth to our babies. And it's very frantic. And we shot so much footage, and you know, because Robin Williams is improvising it. I'm improvising it. Hugh Grant is, you know, British actors are very well trained. You know,
yes.
They really are. And Australian actors, but British actors especially. And so he, Rob Williams drove him nuts.
What?
And I liked it. I get Robin going and going. You'd think Julianne Moore and him would be like tight, but no. So I loved her so much. So, you know, so anyway, get to the point in the scene where I'm going to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
And he was like so nervous. He's like, I go, I got it. Listen, okay. So the stunt guy's out there. And then Tom steps over and punches. He goes, no. I don't trust him. I don't trust him. I go, hey, man, I do. I've been in a lot of stuff. I'm used to punching. And he's like, no, Hugh, we're going to shoot him from behind. And there's going to be that much space between Tom's fist and your face. He goes, I do not fucking trust him at all. I don't. He's going to fucking punch me in the face. And Chris Columbus comes over to us. No, it's going to be fine. And even Julianne Moore's like, don't be such a wuss. He's not going to, it's actors do it all the time. He's going to be that far away. And everybody stops the whole crew stops. And he goes, it's going to be fine, Hugh. He's not going to, I go, I'm not going to, I swear to God, I'm not going to get any more material. So anyway, we start the scene. It's a very hectic scene. And we get ready for that take. And they've actually put a mark on the floor so I know where my foot is.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to, I'm sure. I step over it and bam, I hit him right in the, you know how it feels to get hit in the nose.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes down and he's like, bloody hell, bloody hell. And we stop and I didn't hit him hard enough for him to go, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, everybody stops and then Julianne Moore's like, bloody hell. And it's just mocked him. And he goes, then he felt bad that he'd overdone it. And then he kind of straight, and then it became a whole thing, but I did hit him right in the nose. I'm like, there is no, I just want to say, I am not going to step, I'm going to keep it right here. I measured it out like 10 times.
Yeah.
Bam, 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 bam. I promise you, Hugh, I know what I'm doing. I mean, come here, bam. I can't reach you from here. And then, of course, I stepped over and bam. I enjoyed him a lot.
Yeah.
And was
Robin just, you know, I just recently watched, my buddy just did a documentary about, I think it's coming out, just got distribution, but it's not the HBO Films doc, but another one that's mainly focuses on the Louis body dementia. And it's.
But it's his wife that is.
Yes. 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 Yeah, my buddy made that.
He said, I got to see that.
Yeah.
You know, Robin was, you know, he's in my group, and I knew Robin. You know, he was sober, he worked so hard on his sobriety, and then he's dealing with that, the Lewy body, and Parkinson's, and, you know, that guy fought, you know, he fought so hard, and, you know, very tragically sad, with passing, but man, he had so much on his plate, but, you know, he's such a good man. I always say this about him. If I called him, a few people, if I called him at 3 a.m, he said, hey, so-and-so's in trouble. Whether he knew him or not, he'd go, let's go get him. And that's the kind of guy he was. He was a service to so many people. And, you know, he was genuinely, the best guy. And I don't know, you know, when I first started coming out here in the 80s to go to the Comedy Store and stuff, and you know, I met Roseanne in 1983 when I was 23, and she was still living in Denver. She wasn't famous yet, she came to Minneapolis to perform, and I was her middle act. She was a headliner, but she wasn't, you know, Roseanne. We hit it right off, and we both started coming out here and meeting all these, you know, big people we heard about.
Yeah.
And Robin Williams is, you know, but people, you know, but then people would be like sort of jealous of Robin Williams, but he was always so amazing. And now you look back, you go, oh, he was so great. And he was always so kind. But when Roseanne and I got divorced, when it first happened, I remember there was a Comic Relief. That's a big comedy thing. And I was standing there and nobody would talk to me except Robin Williams. Like, you know, he was like, I'm not going to, you know, he made a special boy. And awesome. I get it, because people are like, well, who are we going to? And, you know, Roseanne was so, she's like, you talk to him, you're never talking to me again. Like, she was, he was always kind. And he did so much for people, but he was suffering, man. He was, you can't imagine having your hard drive wacky like that. Like, people, I can't even imagine. So I want to see that. And I just know from I can tell you from my experience with him, sitting next to him, sitting in a room with him, worked very hard on his, he was sober. He worked very hard on his sobriety. He went away to a place to get for his mental health. And, you know, God bless him. What a brutal, you know, but yeah, I hate.
You feel like you've ever seen anything like that on stage since then, or do you feel like that's just like a one in a million type of talent?
Like, 200 million.
Yeah.
I mean, because the way you can't replicate the way he came to be and the way he, you know, I mean, the way he came to be and the way he also respected, you know, people like Jonathan Winters, because you can't replicate how Jonathan Winters came to be, and also the way he came to be with television, and they made that show, created that show to around what he did, and again, the way the Comedy Store was, and the times then, and times are different now, and it's also good to look at his work.
Yeah.
And his work, his acting work, his, you know, and, you know, you could just see the quality of, you know, his work and the quality of a human being he was. And you can still be a very good human being and very, very talented. And I like looking back at people. We're just watching Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was also somebody that I spent time with. And, you know, that just these icons. I found him to be a very nice guy too. So, but Robin is, you know, he was
one of a kind.
Sometimes when people are, I just have to say this. Sometimes when people are that vulnerable and kind and genuinely, and I can speak to this for the time I spent with him. It's the world is, you know, I think he was 62 years old. Was he? That's a lot. You know, if your heart is that open, that is a lot. So some people that are assholes and live to be 110.
Right, because they're a little more shut off, right? They're kind
That's
of,
true.
Their guards true. Up. They're not letting in as much.
That's very true. So
real quick, when things open, you've been to the Comedy Store, like when things were still jamming, right? Like, I feel like I saw you there in the last.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I go there. Yeah, I like it because I do 12 minutes and then the next, and there's somebody completely different.
Yeah.
And I just love watching all the variety of people. You go down there on a Saturday night and do those shows where everybody's so different. They're different than me because they're very organized. But, you know, you see such a variety of comics like you and like these people you see on TV. And it's just one after another. And it's just so cool. And
so different. Do you get flooded with memories, though, of the when you first saw the store when you're there and you're like, oh, you young kid? Like, because I hear that from Paulie all the time. He's like, bro, you don't even know what it was like 30 years ago. You don't even know. And he's like, this hallway was fuck. He's like, I was like, what a great night. He's like, it's great, but it's not what it was. And he's like, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's great. It's the store. It's breathing. It's alive. But And then he'll tell me so many stories, and I'm like, oh, there's no way that'll happen now. You know, and for the better. I mean, the story
is good. It's good because people, you know, it's good. It Polly, you know, Polly was a kid too. And Polly was, you know, his experience is, you know, more, you know, his mom and, you know, he's got a whole different.
Yes.
And we like to say, but I think it's pretty great now. They haven't cleaned the fucking place since then. It's disgusting. But, you know, there was a lot of drugs and nonsense, a lot of bitterness, a lot of backstabbing, you know. But, you know, when people are great on that stage, and it's been packed down there, and that's great. And people, just the fact they remember, you know, you're standing there on that stage, you're like, I'm on the main stage of the motherfucking Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Where everybody has been. It's the same place. You know, well, Ciro's before it's Comedy Store, which is a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but Paulie, you know, Paulie's very, you know, he's amazing. He is so, you know, because he I remember him when he was a teenager, and those guys, he's like, well, those guys embraced me. And, you know, he never got into drugs, Paulie, but those guys were drug addicts. Those guys were,
they were his babysitters.
Know, they were filthy.
Fucked up.
They were filthy. And, you know, and I was, you know, Roseanne and I partied. We did a lot of drugs and we drank a lot, me more than her, but the Kinnison and those guys, you know, they were just filthy and they took Paulie under their wing, but Paulie did not have the bug. And he's very lucky that for a kid, it's not the best. It's not the Big Brother program.
Yeah.
But he turned out, Paulie's done very well for himself.
Oh yeah.
You know, and, but it was a exciting time and, so much talent and so much weirdness.
Well, so much talent and so much weirdness could be the name of your next autobiography.
Yeah.
Tom, thank you for making time, dude. And Sasha, a real treat to meet you. Your guys' podcast is fucking great. Two in the Bush. Go check it out. And when the movie comes out, send me whatever, and I'll blast it out for you. And hopefully next time I see you at a Smith Purim party, we can give a joint speech.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
You guys be safe, man.
We got to send you a music video.
Oh, please.
You'll laugh.
I'll throw it in this episode if that's cool.
Please do. She's very good. That's a fact. She's very good.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Psych. All right, guys. Thanks, Tommy. Bye, Sasha.
Okay, bye.